Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Sako. Zach, how you doing? You said you were a little under the weather earlier this week.
I'm doing all right, but thanks for your concern, Jim. I appreciate it.
So like you said, you needed the bye week, but now you're healthy. You're not on the list before the game where we're going to hear doubtful or questionable or anything. You're primed and ready.
No question marks here.
Very good. Glad to hear that, Zach. Before we get started with Zach, just want to remind you all, chance to join us for a live show from the cafe in downtown State College next Tuesday. That's September 24th. Brought to you by Keystone Sports and Fox Sports 98.7 in State College. We're having as our special co-host, former Nittany Lion, Rogers Alexander. You'll want to see, Rogers is a great guy. We're going to start the show at 6 p.m. at the cafe. Come on in early for some great food specials and some drink specials from Pulp Daddy Beer. If you're a hazy IPA guy, trust me, it is the way to go. All right, Zach, we mentioned it's been a bye week. So what else are we going to do? We're going to jump to some conclusions. We're going to take a look at where the team stands after these two games. And, you know, I started this conversation with you before we got on the air saying, look, I think we could just have a blanket qualifier that it's only two games, right? So it's a little hard to come to any hard conclusions, right?
Yeah, it is difficult because you're seeing that West Virginia, who knows how good they actually are. It's still a 12-game season. I don't know that we can make any conclusions about what West Virginia has done, what Bowling Green is as well, even though they look like they're a better team. And that's not to say that Penn State isn't in the upper echelon of college football, but I think everybody's overreacting to the glaring mistakes, particularly on the defense. Okay, so everyone wants to give as much credit as we can to the offense, but when it comes to the defense, it's being extremely critical. How could they? How dare they? And that's, Jim, that's understandable because the offense for the past two seasons, I mean, all three of Mike Yursich's seasons were either, 22 was fine, but 2021, they went 7-6. 2023 was the year that ultimately got him canned. So there was nowhere to go but up for the offense. Whereas the defense, you're coming off of a Manny Diaz tenure that kept the standard that Brent Pry had and made it better. That made Penn State's defense elite. It's blitz happy. It was exciting. It forced turnovers. You wreaked havoc from the defensive side of things. So it's understandable when you're going from the best of the best to, okay, hey, there's some question marks and concerns here, to the offense that had nowhere to go but up in this case with Andy Kotelnicki. So I understand the discourse around what Penn State's done through two games.
And I think, you know, I'm a huge Manny Diaz fan, and especially what he did here at Penn State. So as you said, on offense, you pretty much said that it has to go up. Defense, it only had one direction to go, because they were so elite last year. And I think, again, jumping to any conclusions after two games is probably silly. I also want to point out, and at the risk of sounding like an apologist for the team, but go through the top 10, and it's hard to find a team that hasn't had a scare somewhere, Zach, where they underperformed. I mean, even Georgia, mighty Georgia, barely escaped Kentucky.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it could be a lot worse in Penn State's case, right? Forget about Georgia for a second. I think that's a fair point, though. Kentucky not on the same level, but that's a one-point game when it shouldn't be if Georgia's supposed to go to the national championship. I digress. You could be in Notre Dame's situation. Notre Dame actually lost to that MAC team at home, and Northern Illinois, I think, is pretty comparable to Bowling Green. So that's the difference here. Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois, and Penn State beats Bowling Green, and I think Northern Illinois and Bowling Green are the same level of caliber, albeit the MAC conference, but those two teams should be contending for a conference title in that respective MAC conference. So Notre Dame actually lost. Penn State ended up controlling the second half, making those halftime adjustments, and won the game not by a blowout margin, but convincingly. It felt like a comfortable win once everything settled down in the second half.
And I'm going to go to the old just win in advance. I feel like that's what college football is turning into
winning,
with so many
cures
teams
everything,
getting
Jim.
it sure does. Let's take a look. Let's drill down a little bit more. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball with Andy Kotelnicki. I think we're all in agreement. We like what we've seen so far on the offensive side of the ball. Let's talk specifically. What have you seen from Andy Kotelnicki? What has he schemed that's enabled them to create some explosive plays? That's the word we used so often last year and didn't see. But we're seeing it in the passing game. We're also seeing it in the running game, Zach.
Andy Kotelnicki is just purely a better play caller and purely a better coach. I think there's just more morale out of the offensive group. And that translates to everything. Cohesiveness, chemistry, confidence. Drew Aller, it's going to start and end with Drew Aller. So how does Drew Aller feel about this offense? Well, he seems a lot more confident. He seems a lot more comfortable. He seems a lot more cohesive. So that's just going to open things up by a wide variety of what they're able to do. Because, Jim, the offense is the same. The offense, in terms of the actual skilled players, Drew Aller, same quarterback. Nicholas Singleton, Catron Allen, same running backs. Wide receivers, okay, you lose Keandre Lambert-Smith, Dante Cephas, and a Malik Mega. But Caden Saunders is back. Liam Clifford is back. Julian Fleming essentially becomes what Keandre Lambert-Smith was in terms of his role of being a veteran leader in the group and not necessarily being the clear-cut number one wide receiver. Trey Wallace, same wide receiver. You lose Theo Johnson, but Tyler Warren's back. Andrew Rapley is now dealing with a long-term injury here in this case. Khalil Dinkins, you got to replace three starters on the offensive line, but everything is the same except for Andy Kotelnicki. So that's how valuable a coordinator and coaching is, because Penn State at its core is pretty similar to what it was in 2023. Now, you naturally are going to get better as a player. If you are talented, you are only going to improve. But in this case, Andy Kotelnicki makes this group that much better because it is the same core of players from a season ago.
I haven't heard it framed that way, but it's a very good point. It is very comparable, the talent, if you look around. Yeah, I know Theo Johnson gone, but Tyler Warren is such a good tight end. You look at tight end and say, hey, we're in pretty good shape there. Absolutely. Wide receivers, very comparable. Running backs. Speaking of the running backs and, you know, the confidence level, we're seeing so much more from the running attack. I did bump into one statistic coming out of these first two games, Zach, and I just want your reaction if it surprises you at all or not. But the ratio of rushes to passes, it's over 2-1. Does that surprise you at all?
Not at all, because Kotelnicki is first and foremost an offensive line type of coach. When he was working his way up through the ranks, offensive line, tight ends coach, offensive line, tight ends coach, and then got into coordinator, play calling, right? So that is who he is at his core. And when you are typically an offensive line guy, you have the belief that, hey, we can impose our will on defenses and be a run first. He's always been a run first type of coach, and now he's a run, and now he's a run first type of play caller, but he will do anything by any means necessary. That means running the football 50, 60 times, he will do it, even though that's going to be his natural inclination. If Drew Aller needs to throw the football 60 times, they will do that. But if you look at what he did at Kansas most recently, you could also point to even Buffalo. I actually know Jarrett Patterson from high school, who set that touchdown record by scoring, I think, 7 or 8 touchdowns in that game for Buffalo. Andy Kotelnicki was his coordinator. So he's always been, and you look at Kansas from last year, they were top 10 in almost every single run offense category. So this does not surprise me by any means, and Penn State's strengths rely in its ground game. Drew Aller is more mobile than people give him credit for. Bo Prabula is a true dual threat quarterback. You have Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen, who are both going to be playing football on Sundays and should be starting running backs if their careers go well in the NFL. Whereas at wide receiver, okay, you have Trey Wallace emerge, but you have question marks about how much upside can Julian Fleming give you? How much upside can Amari Evans give you? How much upside, right? There's a lot of unproven ability And when it comes to the wide receiver core, outside of Tyler Warren, if we're talking about overall pass catchers, Trey Wallace is unproven. Caden Saunders is unproven. Liam Clifford is unproven. Julian Fleming's unproven. And those are the guys that you're relying on. But Nicholas Singleton is proven. Ka'Tron Allen is proven. Bo Prabula, we know what he can do from an athletic standpoint. Aside from being a quarterback, he is just a pure all-around athlete. So the assets lie in the ground game and not necessarily the aerial attack.
Let's talk specifically about Nick Singleton, who last year, again, the narrative was, where are those big runs? Where are those explosive plays? We're seeing them this year. What are you seeing in the running game from Andy Kotelnicki that is creating these opportunities?
As scheme, first and foremost, you are able, when you have the that's why pre-snap motion and all that movement beforehand does two things. It allows Drew Aller and the offense to get a look at, okay, and the center, most importantly, Nick Dawkins, and then the quarterback, Drew Aller. That pre-snap motion communicates to Penn State's offense what the defense is going to do. Are they in man? Are they in zone? Is there going to be a blitzer, right? And in the NFL, that is easier to do. It's harder to distinguish because they're so good at disguising it. But in college, you can get a defense to tip its hand pretty quickly if you do the right things pre-snap. Okay, so Drew Aller and Nick Dawkins need to be smart enough to make the checks at the line of scrimmage for blocking. Drew Aller can check the play if he wants to. They trust him enough. But then it also does another thing. It gets the defense out of balance. So it communicates for Penn State's offense what they're looking for. It also causes miscommunication on defense. So that's how those explosive plays happen. Mike Yurcich just wasn't doing enough pre-snap motion. Now Andy Kotelnicki is the complete opposite and is doing it too much, but too much is a good thing in this case.
Well, too much, I'm not sure. Like you said, when it works out for you, it's hard to say that it's too much. And it's nice to see. The other thing, and I just wanted, again, your reaction to it, because I've talked about this on previous shows. If you add up, in talking about the wide receivers, they're not proven yet, but they're not proven that they're not good either. I just don't feel like there's been enough opportunities. There's only been, 37 passes in two games. It's not very many.
No, it's not. And that's just because, again, what we've discussed already, that Andy Kotelnicki is going to naturally call more running plays. I have more confidence to say that Nicholas Singleton and Ka'Tron Allen are more, that this isn't to be critical of the wide receiver group, but they are more talented than Trey Wallace and Caden Saunders and Liam Clifford are at wide receiver.
They're more talented, and it's been proven. All right, that's it for quarter number one. We got more to go with Zach when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galanti. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, let our listeners know where they could find everything from Zach.
Absolutely. So I'm the host of Locked On Nittany Lions, and that's on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And I post a daily episode when it comes to Penn State football, Penn State wrestling, Penn State basketball, you name it. There is daily content centered around your favorite Penn State sports teams on all your podcast platforms and YouTube.
Make sure you check Zach out. All right, Zach, we're looking at how this team looks so far. It's only been two games. And quite candidly, we're not going to learn a whole lot this weekend against Kent State, are we?
No, we're not. The things that we can learn, actually, this is a learning experience about the depth chart. How much depth is behind this first group of players, especially now when Penn State is dealing with some early bumps and bruises? Andrew Rapplier has a long-term injury, so we can't expect him probably. And what does that mean? Does that mean week 8, week 9, week 10, or does that mean the first week of a potential college football playoff matchup? He's not out for the season, but he's out for an extended period of time. It's been kind of a guessing game with KJ Winston. We truly actually don't know if he's injured. We have to presume so because James Franklin hasn't said, yes, KJ Winston is injured and dealing with bumps and bruises. We have not heard that. He's just saying he's unavailable. And until he talks to KJ and his family, he's not going to disclose what's going on. So we just have to presume it's injury related. I'm 99% sure. But Winston being unavailable, that impacts a lot of things. You run a three safety look. Who's that next safety? Oh, it's a true freshman that hasn't played a whole lot, except maybe I think a dozen snaps on special teams. Dejon Lane, they talk very highly of him, but how good is he actually? So we're going to see Penn State build, hopefully, a 42-50 point lead like a Tennessee team did just a week ago when they won 71-0, and then start to get the young players in. So that's Luke Reynolds playing, hopefully three quarters, if not more, playing the whole game. I think he should start alongside, forget about Khalil Dinkins for a second, start Luke Reynolds aside from Tyler Warren and let him play a full four quarters now that you've announced that Penn State does intend to burn his red shirt. Dejon Lane, you got to play Dejon Lane as much as possible. I would try to get him into, now that's where I'm anticipating a little bit of a different look from the defense. If KJ Winston's not available for Kent State, expect them to go back to a 4-3 defense where you have your traditional three linebacker look. Tony Rojas, and then a combination of Kobe King, Dom DeLuca, or Tyler Elston. Probably those first three that I named there with Tyler Elston coming off of the bench. But I would not be surprised if they move away from the 4-2-5 and go to a 4-3. So you need to see, and then the backup linebackers, Anthony Speca, Kari Jackson, right? More an advanced role for an offensive lineman like Cooper Cousins. The freshmen really matter in this game.
You know, Zach, it's like you've been cheating here, reading off my script. My next question to you was going to be, who are some young players that you're anxious to see in this game? Because that is probably the most important thing. And by the way, I love that four game rule where you can play four games and not lose your red shirt. And it's great to use, is it not, this opportunity to play some even true freshmen and get their feet wet?
It's extremely valuable. And I think that can't be overstated enough, that the plan is to do what Tennessee did, go up by 40 plus points. Seriously, Penn State's intention here is to be up by at least 42-0 or 42-7. Maybe Kent State gets some insane touchdown in there. Who knows, right? But they want to build a 5, 6, 7 touchdown lead and then just not look back. Play the second string, third string offense, defense to get them acclimated, because you never know when they're going to have to go in against in Illinois or UCLA, forget about Ohio State and USC for a moment. Those other Big Ten conference games, if you don't have your full strength of players and guys who aren't experienced have to go into the game because of bumps and bruises that happen in real time, you're going to be doomed if they're not prepared.
Well, and we've seen it already where the depth is tested at tight end, linebacker, defensive end, where guys are out injury or for other reasons. I kind of shifted gears quicker than I expected in talking about the upcoming game. I want to circle back to the team and how they performed in the first two games. We drilled down a bit on the offense. I want to talk about the defense a little bit. And no one could be happy with how the defense played in the first half against Bowling Green. But it was good. They seemed to make their adjustments. It was much better in the second half. But more specifically, what have you seen from Tom Allen and the play calling for the defense? Did you see a difference between what they were doing at West Virginia and, say, what they were doing at Bowling Green? I'm specifically looking for, was it just plain vanilla against Bowling Green?
Well, that's just it. Everybody wants to come down on Penn State's defense, and I think that's fair because this is a Big Ten team and a college football playoff contending team versus a MAC team that, granted, is contending for its conference, but you should still be able to win by 2, 3, 4 touchdowns if you play the game correctly. Jim, I don't know if I've expressed this on another episode or if I've expressed this on a Locked On Nittany Lions episode, where we've already maybe had this discourse. But Penn State is only going to show so much early in the season. Bowling Green is a well-coached team. They're a veteran team. They have 30-plus seniors. They saw the footage from the game against West Virginia where Penn State did a lot of things well. But if you have the answers to the test, you're more likely to do well on that test when it actually does present itself. So if you think back to high school chemistry and it's an open book test, you're probably going to do well. Well, Penn State didn't make a lot of wholesale changes going from week one to week two, because they have to think down the road. We don't want to put everything on film. We got Ohio State. We got USC. Bowling Green as a team. This is natural and coincidental to an extent. Like, Penn State doesn't go in and say, well, let's just put together the most vanilla game plan ever for Bowling Green because we know we're going to beat them. That's not what I'm going to imply. But I would also be wrong to say that Penn State isn't looking ahead and being cautious with what it does put on film. So, I mean, I've spoken to coaches before, whether that's at the high school level as well, that if they know they're playing an inferior opponent, they are not going to put their best blueprint together. That's just the fact of the matter, because it is a 10-game season in high school and then playoffs, 12-game in college, and the NFL does it as well. If you know that you are facing an easier matchup, you're just going to put in plays that are not as consequential when you get to that primetime sort of game.
I thought it was also interesting when James Franklin spoke last week. He talked about tackling needs to be better, but he also mentioned that they had a little bit of trouble with communication. And it's interesting because the crowd knows to be quiet, the home crowd, when you're on offense. Defense, they're used to making it very difficult on the offense, where it seemed to actually be counterproductive for, you know, the Penn State. I suspect we'll see them. That's the kind of thing that you work out.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Where the crowd actually hinders you, doesn't help you in this case because of that new helmet technology, the new helmet communication. Sure, you're still going to have some things called from the sideline, but it's primarily going to Kobe King or whoever that Mike linebacker is. And then he's got to be able to communicate to the defense and signal to the defense, while a crowd of 100,000+, in their mind, they need to make noise. And I'm not saying the crowd needs to change anything, but Penn State has to take on that responsibility and focus on that. And I've heard, you go to practice once a week, you kind of hear, you know, Penn State's blasting noise at the top of its speakers outside of Haluba Hall. That is just done with the intention of, whether they're playing in Beaver Stadium or they're playing on the road, they need to just be adjusted, acclimated to whatever the crowd noise is going to be because of this new level of this different level of communication in college athletics.
Yes, and that's the thing, too. You've got a new coordinator, the new communication concepts. So I think we even talked before the season that, hey, there's going to be a couple bumps in the road to get you there. So I think that's why the bye, it's an early bye, but I think it was helpful for this team. And Kent State, I hate to put it this way, never assume anything, but it's essentially the closest thing to a bye. So they are essentially going to have 3 weeks from Bowling Green until they play Illinois and things start to get more interesting with the schedule. All right, again, let's go through realizing that we're only two games into the season, Zach, but what players have surprised you a bit? Who's been either in a positive way or a negative way? Who has surprised you so far?
I mean, there's so many players on this hypothetical list. I'll kind of go with the immediate names that come to mind, but there's a lot of cases that can be made both positive and negatively. I'll start with the positive. Zane Durant has been the best player analytically on Penn State's defense. That Zane Durant is causing a lot of havoc in the interior, and if he was a defensive end, he might have more sacks or, you know, different plays made. But since he's taking on double teams and everything else, I mean, he's really stood out and deserves a lot of credit here, being Penn State's best player defensively to this point. If we want to go to the negative, the inverse of that, Abdul Carter has been rated as the worst defensive player on Penn State's team. I think that has to do with the position change. I also think that has to do with offenses are scheming for him. They're either double teaming him or scheming plays away from him that aren't allowing him to go and make his plays that he's that his disposition is, that he's going, that we assume that he's going to be. So that's opened up player. Tony Rojas is in that category of, hey, he's really stepped up. If somebody that's a little off the wall defensively, how about an Elliot Washington? Elliot Washington has been fantastic because I expected him to be that third string cornerback that maybe saw some playing time, but he can be a serious contributor throughout the season, and it's why Penn State's defensive backfield has so much depth. You can talk about Jalen Reed in that same conversation as Zane Durant, somebody who has really stepped up and become an elite playmaker on the defensive side of the football. Amari Evans, of course, is somebody that we can look to offensively as someone who stepped up. Trey Wallace, the same thing. Still looking for Liam Clifford or Caden Saunders or Julian Fleming, just anybody in that wide receiver core. Really, the offensive line has not been perfect. I think Drew Shelton has seen a lot of struggles early. He actually got taken out of the game against Bowling Green, and Nolan Rucci went in there at left tackle. I'm wondering if there's now a position battle for that left tackle spot. Remember, that's Drew Aller's blind side, so that is very important to get that anchored down now rather than middle of the season when you're going up against USC, Ohio State, even Wisconsin and Washington. Those teams can capitalize if you don't have an answer at left tackle by then.
Real quickly, how did Nolan Rucci play when he was in there?
He was okay. I don't know how much you can differentiate. I would say Nolan Rucci played better than Drew Shelton in that game against Bowling Green, but it wasn't night and day. They're really, the gap wasn't far, and that's why there is a competition, because you still don't have an answer at this point.
All right, very good. That is it for Zach. We're going to have Sean Gold coming in, making his picks for this week. We're going to do it right after this short break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. All ready for Sean's take this week, where Sean gives us the picks for the weeks. Before we get started, just want to remind you, next week, next Tuesday, that's September 24th, we are going to be doing a live show from the cafe in downtown State College, brought to you by Keystone Sports and Fox Sports 98.7 in State College. We're having as our special co-host, former Nittany Lion, Rogers Alexander. We'll start the show at 6 p.m., but come on in early for some great food and drink specials by the folks at the cafe. And Pulp Daddy Beer. You definitely want to try the Pulp Daddy Beer. Trust me on that one. All right, Sean. I hate to say it, but we've got a review last week first, don't we?
We do, and it's the beginning of college football has not treated me well. So we are looking to reflect and then move on and be better.
Okay. Unfortunately, yes, we do have to reflect, but you were 2-4 last week. I was 4-2. How's that?
I wish I was in agreement with you more from last week, because I'd be feeling a bit better right now.
Well, unfortunately, when we get to the picks, you make your picks first, so you won't get my help on them. Let's take a look back. Let's see what went on, what went wrong last week. Let's start with a game that, unfortunately, we both got wrong, and that was LSU at South Carolina. South Carolina was getting 7 points. I thought that was kind of a fair spread. We both took LSU, and I remember making the comment that South Carolina has been playing well this year, but I went along. We both went down the LSU path, and to be honest with you, LSU was fortunate to even get out of there with the win.
Yeah, as much as we could talk about South Carolina looking good, I think the bigger takeaway is that LSU is in big trouble. USC was not a hoax or a fluke in that game. They're not that great of a team. And I kept kind of waiting for them to, right the ship, turn things around and look the part. And I don't know that we're going to see a great LSU football team this season.
And, you know, that's kind of the question that we all have to face with so many of these teams. Again, still early in the season. At what point do you have to start believing what you see and stop saying, well, this is the time we're going to see that real team this week? And I think our next game is a perfect example of this. Oregon had not looked very impressive in their first couple games. And the question became, do you buy into that or not? You apparently did not buy into it. You had the Oregon Ducks. Me, I started to buy into it. I started to believe, and I went with Oregon State. I thought at home, a rivalry game, I thought Oregon State at the very least would keep this close, definitely within that 16.5-point spread. Not a chance. Oregon just ran all over them, 49-14, Sean.
Yeah, you know, the thing with this one and with Oregon, why I was okay going back to the Ducks after two very disappointing games is Dylan Gabriel. We saw what he did at Oklahoma last year. When he entered the portal, I was super interested to see where he'd go. I think he's too good to not get this offense corrected. And while I was worried, because Oregon State covers very well at home historically, I trusted Dylan Gabriel to figure things out, to get settled in. And he did that in week three. So it's going to be very interesting to see, is that the real Oregon moving forward? Are they going to be this team that was the number two ranked team in the country heading into the season? Is that the real Oregon Ducks? Or was this game, maybe Oregon State really wasn't that good and Oregon won a rivalry game? And, you know, the next couple weeks for Oregon are going to be very interesting to see what type of team is this. I think they're a team that has the potential to go all the way and rival Georgia, who another team that didn't look that great last week. But be in the conversation for one of the best teams in the country. That's what they were in the preseason. I think they can get back to that level.
Well, the game that we're all pointing towards is October 12th when Oregon hosts Ohio State. Boy, that will be a big one. I'm not sure if we're going to learn a whole lot about Oregon between now and then. Next up was the game. Again, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde. We had Notre Dame, who a week ago, just a shocker, losing to a MAC team, Northern Illinois. And the question became, was that real or not? And I think we both kind of looked at it like, you know what? They're going to bounce back from that. And sure enough, they just boat raced Purdue.
Yeah, come Saturday morning, this was my favorite game that we went over. And I was telling some people, I really like what Notre Dame has to offer. Now, I was expecting maybe a 28-10 score. 66-7 was different. So Notre Dame, they got cooking right away. And, you know, a lot of big chunk plays, which we were missing from that offense. So, you know, they did exactly what they needed to do for what happened the prior week with a terrible loss. So another team that's going to be very interesting the rest of the way. And, you know, we'll see. They've got USC, we know. They've got some other games that are going to be interesting. And if they win out, all of a sudden we're talking about a playoff team. But is Notre Dame versus Purdue the real Notre Dame, or did they massively overplay in this one?
Whenever a team wins a game that way, I try hard not to overreact to it. I'm not sure I would find any difference between 33-7 and 66-7. Once you reach that point, it's just a question then of, you know, are you piling on or not? I just read a stat. Purdue was 1-for-12 on third downs in that game. That's not conducive to success. It really isn't. All right. Here's always interesting. We always pick a game with Colorado involved. It's like we just can't help ourselves. And it's fascinating because typically you are the one who's more pro-Colorado. And I'm the one who goes the other way. And I admit, part of it for me is my anti-Deion Sanders bias. But in this one, we reversed roles. You took Colorado State. I took Colorado. And the Buffaloes, again, in a rivalry game, 28-9.
You know, I think we did what we had to do to break the curse on Colorado because I had been in that Colorado homer believing in the potential of this team week in, week out, and they would burn me time and time again. And I think I said it to you after the show. I was like, watch, this will be the week that I go against Colorado and they cover and get a big time win. And they did exactly that. It's such a hard team because for the majority of their games, with Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter, you have the two best players on the field. They're both going to be top 10 picks in the NFL draft. But the offensive line have been issues. The offensive line played a whole lot better in this game. We saw what Shador can do when he has time, and he picked apart that defense. And my biggest takeaway, and we're going to talk about Colorado, you know, on the next quarter as well, the defense played really well in the first half. That's rare for Colorado. Typically, they're a better second half defense. They played really good defense for four quarters in this game, which was refreshing to see if you're a Colorado fan.
I kind of went with Colorado with kind of the bounce back kind of week. I think we often overreact to a game, you know, and I don't want Notre Dame losing in a major upset. The previous week makes me think, all right, they'll bounce back. The same thing there with Colorado. All right, the next game, interesting, was Missouri and BC, and Missouri won the game, but they didn't cover the spread. The 16.5 points, I just thought was too much. I thought we could see Missouri winning by 10, 14 points, pretty much handling the game, but not pulling away. In fact, it was really the other way. BC looked very much like the better team for a good portion of this game. And now, you know, the question will be next week and the week after, do you buy into BC or not? But what happened here, Sean?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, BC was going to cover this. Their touchdown with 4 minutes left in the game made it a little bit closer because Missouri really started to dominate in the second half. But BC got up to an early lead, and that was kind of shocking to me. It's a lot of points no matter what with the 16.5 against a good Boston College team. But the fact that they came out so hot is really promising for this team. And, you know, for them, it's unfortunate that they couldn't pull off the upset, but I'm kind of buying some stock in Boston College for the rest of the season because I didn't think they were going to be able to hang with Missouri. And morning of, I was seeing more and more trends pointing in Missouri's favor in this matchup. And Boston College kind of, came out from the gate first quarter, early touchdown, and put Missouri on their heels for a while.
I'm with you. I think I'm beginning to buy in on BC being legitimate. I know people will make fun of Florida State and take away from BC's win there, but Florida State does have legitimate talent on that team. And, you know, BC winning that game, I think you have to give some credit there. All right, final game was Arizona at Kansas State. You had Arizona. Kansas State won it big, 31-7. I did take Kansas State. My reasoning, I don't know a lot about either team, but I just felt like Kansas State was just more legit than Arizona, and they're playing at Kansas State.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get one of those road underdogs in a shootout, you know, being able to hang, and that's what this Arizona team is supposed to be. They're supposed to be a team that airs the ball out. They've got the best receiver in the country, McMillan. 300 yards in week one. They got him back on track, but I don't know what happened to this offense. That was a really embarrassing performance by them. And for a program that was kind of building up, had gotten, you know, into the rankings, this was a big step for them to at least keep this game close. And getting blown out there is pretty concerning for this team.
And, you know, it's still so early and so hard. There's just no sure things. And where I'm headed with this, two games that we didn't play were Georgia at Kentucky and Alabama at Wisconsin. I think very comparable, probably very comparable spreads. Both were the favorite, maybe a 2-touchdown or so favorite, playing on the road. You had Georgia barely escaping and Alabama running roughshod over Wisconsin. And I would have looked at both those games very similarly.
I completely agree. And Alabama did what I thought they would do after a rough week before. Georgia, though, I didn't think there was a team in that country that would be within two scores from the Georgia Bulldogs. So to see that kind of, you know, opens my eyes up a bit. Maybe, hey, maybe Ohio State, maybe if Oregon figures it out, like maybe Georgia is beatable. Maybe Alabama can get them again like they did last year. So while I'm disappointed in how Georgia played, I'm looking forward to them.
All right, that's it for this segment. Stay tuned. We got the picks for next week.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Sean Gold. I'm Jim Galante. We are doing Sean's take here. We're getting Sean's Pulp Daddy picks of the week. Don't forget to try out the Pulp Daddy. And if you want a place to go, if you're in State College, join us next Tuesday at the cafe. There'll be Pulp Daddy specials, and we'll be doing a live show there brought to you by Keystone Sports and Fox Sports 98.7. We're going to have as our guest host Rogers Alexander, former Penn Stater. Fantastic guest. You'll love Rogers. So please join us. That's next Tuesday, 6 o'clock. All right, Sean, another week, another chance for some Pulp Daddy picks. You ready to begin?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with Illinois at Nebraska. This could be an interesting game. Both teams, I think, playing pretty well so far. Nebraska, they are at home, and they're a 9-point favorite.
Yeah, this is – I'm going to go back to our Arizona-Kansas State game here. This is going to be a bit more how I thought that game would be going, where either team can win – Illinois, both teams are ranked, which was kind of surprising at the start of the season. Nebraska's quarterback playing incredibly well right now, but I like this Illinois team. They're putting up more points than I expected, and I'm going to go with this game being pretty close. Maybe Illinois gets a backdoor cover here. Nebraska should win this one at home, but I do like the way Illinois is playing right now, and I think they're a dangerous team on the road in conference, so give me Illinois plus 9.
I'm actually going to go with Nebraska. I really debated on this one. I think it can be a close one. I am afraid of that backdoor cover, but I could see this being, you know, a 24-14 game, you know, 24-10 with Nebraska. Close, hard fought, but I'm thinking, you know, Nebraska will either get that last score or keep Illinois from getting it. So it'd be a two-score favorite there. Next one. This is one's huge. USC at Michigan. Two teams going in opposite directions. USC had a big win against LSU. Michigan looked awful earlier in the year against Texas. The game is at Michigan, and USC is a 6-point favorite. So you got the Wolverines as a 6-point dog at home.
Definitely not a line I was anticipating if you told me this was going to be here back in week zero. What I will say is I think Texas set the blueprint for USC in this game. We've got a very good offensive coach going into Michigan. We've seen this story before. And if I'm USC, I'm trying to replicate the exact thing that Steve Sarkisian did with Texas here. So USC's defense looks a lot better. I think Michigan will move the ball a bit better than they have in the past couple weeks. And it's the first time USC has a Big Ten, big time matchup. But I'm going to go with USC here. I think Miller Moss is really, really good. And like I said, if they can just replicate, if Lincoln Riley can take what Texas did and put that game plan together, I think USC has a way to beat Michigan by a touchdown in this one. It's not going to be easy at all, but I'm really low on Michigan. And I'm getting higher and higher on USC, coming off a bye as well.
I'm probably not as high as you are on USC, but I am as down as you are on Michigan. I don't see them having the firepower offensively. I just can't see them putting up enough points to stay with USC. And in fact, I think if this were is a one touchdown game, I think a lot of folks will say, gee, Michigan played pretty well just to stay within one touchdown. Well, guess what? One touchdown means USC has covered that 6 points. I wouldn't be surprised if that spread goes up a bit the rest of this week, but I'm with you. I've got USC, and more so, I'm against Michigan on that one. All right, this is going to be a little bit fascinating. Let's do our home team, Nittany Lions, Kent State at Penn State. Prior to the bye, Penn State had a MAC game against Bowling Green, a 30-point favorite. Penn State ended up fighting for their life just to win the game, okay, Sean? And Kent State, though, last week against Tennessee, it was 65-0 at halftime. I guess Tennessee just kind of pulled back. I believe it was a 71-0 final. So in this one, Penn State is currently a 49-point favorite. Boy, that's a lot of points, Sean.
It is a lot of points. And I'm going to kind of attack this one the same way we attacked the Bowling Green week. One, Penn State had a bye week to reflect on almost losing that game. So I think they're going to be ready to go into this game locked in and fired up. And two, we've talked about it before. Penn State has covered big spreads very well in the past. And James Franklin knows this number. And he wants to show that Penn State is a team that belongs in that upper echelon of college football. So I hate taking a spread this big. It really does scare me, but I'm going to go with Penn State. They've done spreads like this before. I think they'll do it again to get back on track after a bye week. So give me Penn State with this boatload of points.
You know, it's hard when they could win this game 53-7, okay? And I think everyone will say, well, they played up to where they were supposed to. And that will not be enough to cover. This is just an incredible 7-touchdown spread. But you know what? I'm with you. I think they will come back after a poor showing against Bowling Green. And Kent State is really bad. I mean, bad, bad. Forget even the final score against Tennessee. Look at that halftime score, and that will be enough to tell you. I think Penn State will try to pile on if they can. I say take the Nittany Lions, but boy, that's a lot of points. All right, here's one. This is a really good Southeast Conference game. Tennessee, who's been playing really well, especially against Kent State, taking on Oklahoma. Now, this is at Oklahoma. The Sooners are at home, and they are a 7.5-point underdog to Tennessee.
Yeah, what an interesting game. Probably the game I'm looking forward to watching the most, maybe even more than that USC-Michigan game, because these two teams are exciting. Now, I've been big on Tennessee all year, and I'm going to go with Tennessee to cover the spread. They're playing at a tough environment, but if this Tennessee team wants to be considered one of the elites, this is a game that they need to win. And if they can go get a double-digit victory in this one, that's going to do wonders for them in the rankings. So Tennessee may have the best offense in college football. They're up in that conversation. I think they put that on display this week. So it's a gutsy one, but I'm going to go with Tennessee here.
You know, I've contemplated this one quite a bit. I'm not sure how good Oklahoma is, but I think Tennessee, before the season started, I looked at the Southeast Conference and said, you know what? There's going to be the team in that second tier or so, or middle of the pack, who's going to bump up and be that kind of team, a contender. I thought it might be LSU. I think we found out pretty early, probably not. I think it could end up being Tennessee. So Oklahoma, they have a daunting schedule throughout the year, but I think for Tennessee, absolutely huge game, really going to put them on the map. I'm going with Tennessee also, even though that spread is a little more than a full touchdown. I'm with you on this one. I'm going with Tennessee. All right, next one, a huge game in the Big 12, and this is Utah at Oklahoma State. Again, it's at Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma State, the Cowboys, are a 3-point favorite at home, which kind of tells you Vegas looks at this as an even matchup, and they probably gave that 3 points for the home team. What do you say, Sean?
Yeah, this one is super, super tough. We got Oklahoma State's hot offense versus Utah's defense that time and time again has shown up, not only this season, but in prior years. We've seen Utah really ruin somebody's season because of how good that defense is. And I want to go with Oklahoma State in this one, but the potential of Utah's defense scares me too much for Oklahoma State. And I'm going to go with Utah to kind of find a way and be scrappy and find a way to slow down this Oklahoma State offense. So give me Utah. I don't love this game, but I'm going to go defense on this one.
I'm not crazy about this one either. This is kind of like I've always enjoyed watching Utah, the toughness, the consistency with which they played. I know their quarterback got banged up, not sure what his status is, but I'm a Utah kind of guy. I even like, you know, when Penn State beat them in the Rose Bowl, it was still a case of I liked and respected Utah. I liked their style, how tough they were. I'm going with Utah also. We're agreeing so far on 4 out of 5. I don't know if that's good or bad, Sean. Let's go. Let's stay in the Big 12 one more time. It seems like we have to. It's like a law on this show. We have to pick the Colorado game. This one is Baylor at Colorado. Colorado is a 2-point favorite at home.
Yeah, glad this game is in Colorado. I think they need a home game here. But what I have to say is Colorado surprised me last week with how their offensive line played. Can they do it in back-to-back weeks? Can the defense show up for 4 quarters in back-to-back weeks? Again, they're going to have the 2 best players in this game in Sanders and Travis Hunter. But the consistency has not been there for the past year and a half. And while I want to see Colorado win this game, while I want to pick Colorado here because I love the Buffaloes, I'm going to go with Baylor. I just don't trust Colorado week to week enough yet to go back to picking them consistently against the spread.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm the guy who typically goes against Colorado. I am not a Colorado fan. I am definitely not a Deion fan, and I'm not a huge fan of his son. But I'm wondering if they found a little something last week. As you pointed out, they almost every game they play in, they have the 2 best players on the field. And having Travis Hunter play both offense and defense, he's often the best player on both sides of the ball when he's out there. So I like that. As you mentioned, the offensive line played much better last week. That's actually enough for me to go with the fighting primes here for this one. I'm going to go with Colorado again, Sean.
Oh, boy. You know, this is one where my heart hopes you're right.
Your wallet doesn't.
Yes, exactly. And I just haven't seen Colorado do anything consistently enough, you know, for me to take my Colorado blinders off and go with them right now.
Okay, that is it for our picks. Real quick, Sean went with Illinois over Nebraska, USC against Michigan, Penn State against Kent State, Tennessee over Oklahoma, Utah over Oklahoma State, and Baylor over Colorado. That is it for the show. Thank you, Sean, and thank you all for listening. Be sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.